The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Nick Watt, and welcome to Politics Weekly. Well, there was a friendly feel in the air at Westminster this week. David Cameron, who's relished taunting Gordon Brown in recent weeks, lavished praise on the Prime Minister.
Can I congratulate the Prime Minister on making... absolutely the right decision with regard to the Dalai Lama? It is a difficult decision, but it wouldn't have been made any better by delaying it, and I congratulate him for doing the right thing.
Yes, that was David Cameron congratulating Gordon Brown for agreeing to meet the Dalai Lama. We'll be discussing the Prime Minister's decision and ask just how far Britain should go in standing up to China. Bloodsport fans will be pleased to know that this friendliness quickly came to an end. After a brief pause, David Cameron mocked the Prime Minister for his inability to make decisions. We'll be discussing whether Brown can ever recover after a Guardian ICM poll handed the Conservatives their biggest lead since 1987. And finally, we'll take a look at the biggest political battle of the year, the Ken and Boris show in London, and ask why the Greens seem to be so in love with Ken Livingstone. You've heard of Ladies' Day at Ascot? Well, it's Ladies' Week at Politics Weekly, as I'm joined by three ladies. There we are, a banned word. We have Caroline Lucas, one of the Green Party's principal speakers, who is an MEP for the South East of England. Welcome to Politics Weekly, Caroline. You're quite a non-partisan sort of politician because you were big mates with Nick Clegg when he was a Lib Dem MEP.
That's a terrible slur on my character. I refute it. Now, Nick's a good friend, but that doesn't mean that you're non-partisan. I think party politics is actually here to stay.
We have Jackie Ashley, the Guardian columnist. Jackie, you kicked off the week with a thundering Guardian column saying how different the world would have been if Tony Blair had shown the sensitivity in Iraq that he showed in Northern Ireland.
Well, yes, it was interesting reading the memoirs of his chief of staff, Jonathan Powell, who was making much of the success. And it was a great success, bringing peace to Northern Ireland. And that was done by getting behind the scenes and talking to people, talking to terrorists. And Powell actually says, perhaps this is what we're going to have to do with Al-Qaeda, with other terrorists in the war on terror, rather than hoping you can win by military means alone. And I think that's a lesson that certainly Powell seems to have learned. What a shame he wasn't saying that to Tony Blair a little bit louder at the time.
And finally, we have Allegra Stratton, who writes about politics on guardian.co.uk. Allegra, you're recovering after going on a walkabout with Boris Johnson last Saturday and getting hit in the face by a drunk.
Yeah, it was in a pub and the drunk said, come on, Boris, if you're a really good bloke, if you're going to be mayor of London, then you've got to buy everyone in the pub a drink. And as he was exhorting Boris to do this, and Boris was quite tempted and his aide said, you really can't, it's against the law. And as Boris was, the drunk turned around and threw out his hand and hit me in the face. And there was a New Yorker journalist there who said, I expected someone to get hit, just not a Guardian journalist.
Dear me. Well, we asked Simon Hoggett, the Guardian sketch writer, to describe the scenes at Prime Minister's Questions in the Commons this week.
Quite a fun Prime Minister's Question time this week. One or two real curiosities in it. David Cameron kicked off asking about China and the violence that's going on in Tibet. Would he meet the Dalai Lama? That's Gordon Brown. Well, the government has been rather mealy-mouthed about this. They don't want to offend the Chinese for all sorts of reasons, mainly to do with money and trade. At the same time, they realise that people really are concerned about Chinese oppression in Tibet, and the Dalai Lama, whatever people in Tibet still think about him, is a sort of symbol, a sort of Asiatic Nelson Mandela. So it's a tricky one for Mr. Brown. And I think what David Cameron hoped to hear was something a little bit evasive, but he didn't. Gordon Brown said he'd spoken to Premier Wen of China. Premier Wen had said that he would enter into dialogue with the Dalai Lama. Gordon Brown would, therefore, well, I didn't say therefore, but he implied, therefore, meet the Dalai Lama himself. It's as if he'd got permission from the Premier. So David Cameron then stood up and said something we've never heard David Cameron say, I don't think, not since he became Tory leader. Can I congratulate the Prime Minister on making absolutely the right decision with regard to the Dalai Lama? I congratulate him for doing the right thing. And sat down, to which Gordon Brown stood up rather churlishly, I thought, and said, we make the right decision at all times. That brought loud and prolonged laughter, as you might imagine. Then Cameron came back with some quite effective zingers, I thought. He talked about Stephen Carter, the spin doctor who's been invited into Downing Street and has been creating a great many waves there. Carter is quoted as saying, living in Downing Street is like living in a surreal cartoon. He then quoted another one of them working at Downing Street, David Muir, who has a website, or on a website he has listed his favourite book, The Unstoppable Power of Leaderless Organisations. Hadn't heard of that book myself, but I should be ordering it on Amazon very quickly.
That was Simon Hoggett. Jackie, wasn't that exchange Simon Hoggett mentioned quite significant? Cameron congratulates the Prime Minister. Brown offers a miserable response. That's not very normal, is it?
Not very normal, I don't know about that. I'm afraid it was, again, another example of Brown's flat-footedness in the Commons. I mean, that was a wonderful occasion for a witty quip, but Brown doesn't do witty quips. He's improving a little bit shit at Prime Minister's questions, but I would say he's going from scoring sort of 1 out of 10 to 2.5 out of 10. Is it a problem? Yes, I think it is, because although we all say, oh, it's a load of rubbish Prime Minister's questions, it's just yarbooing, it is important for the morale of the MPs and for people watching. And Brown just does seem very miserable all the time and not able to react quickly. Cameron looks quite sunny. He sounds optimistic. He sounds cheerful. He sounds in charge. So I think it's something Brown still needs to do a lot of work on.
Allegra, perhaps you can tell us why Gordon Brown might be miserable. There was a very interesting Guardian poll, ICM poll, this week in the paper. And for the Anoraks, it said the Conservatives were on 42%, Labour on 29%, and the Lib Dems 21%. Biggest Tory lead since 1987. It's quite interesting
because some of the Labour people I've spoken to think that he's got better at PMQs and think that, for instance, this week wasn't so bad. And for instance, on the economy, which is one of the reasons why it could be argued that the polls are so bad because of the budget, the polls are so bad for Labour. In PMQs, 24 questions asked, the last question was about the economy, and it wasn't something that David Cameron went on at all. So I think that the polls are bad, but I don't think it was really sort of shown in PMQs. PMQs seems sort of about subjects that weren't really what's causing trouble for Gordon Brown at the moment.
And Caroline, can I ask you, obviously as a Green MEP, you will be saying that that poll is grossly unfair because your party will be storming into power at the next general election. But can I just ask you, from your European perspective as an MEP, does this look like a government that's at the end of the road? Does this look like a change moment?
I think it definitely looks like a change moment. Can I just go back to the poll for a second, though? Because I did say others was on 8%. And so if we had proportional representation, I'd be pretty happy with 8%. We'd have some Greens in Parliament. But yeah, I mean, I think the trouble with this government now is that it's lost all credibility, and its hypocrisy and double standards are just making people sick. You know, I don't think it's that people actually particularly like Cameron, but they just are so disgusted with the government. For example, on post offices, just last night we had an example where Jack Straw and Jeff Hoon, who've been protecting and trying to stand up for their post offices in their constituency because their votes are at stake, you know, they get into the House of Commons last night and they still vote in favour of the closure programme. This is just such rank hypocrisy. And whether it's Trident nuclear weapons, whether it's the expansion of Heathrow Airport, whether it's, you know, King's North Power Station, we might have the first coal-fired power station in 30 years. This government's policies are utterly bankrupt and people really feel that. Absolutely.
And Jackie, in terms of Caroline saying that the policies of this government are bankrupt, I mean, presumably the significant thing about that poll is it came after the budget. Now, if a government can't get a bounce or at least get political initiative from a budget, that's pretty tricky, isn't it?
I think it is. And I think Labour are scratching their heads about why it was so bad, because actually at the time, the budget seemed to be not bad. It wasn't great. It wasn't very exciting. It was actually rather dull, but it seemed to do a few of the things that needed doing. And I think they are rather disturbed at how it seems to have gone so badly in the polls. I mean, I think it's also a factor that the general economic situation is being partly blamed on Labour, and that's something for which they can't do anything about at the moment. But I do think you're right. There is this hypocrisy going on over so many issues recently that they need to either put the case better for doing what they're doing or not vote in a hypocritical way. But they're not doing either.
And Caroline, can I just ask you, that you're saying obviously it's potentially over for the government because people see them as hypocrites, but the beneficiary seems to be the Conservatives and David Cameron. Now, he's saying vote blue, go green. Obviously, you welcome
sick
that.
Class. I would welcome it perhaps if it was true, but it is so patently untrue. When you see, for example, the policies that Boris is now talking about, you know, he's talked about the low emission zone as the most draconian policy in Europe. You know, he was against the Kyoto Protocol. He's against the action on climate change. He's going to scrap the affordable houses programme. He opposed the minimum wage. I mean, this could mark the end of progressive policies and politics. So, I mean, again, I'm not so sure it's people actually warming to Cameron. It's people disgusted with Labour. It's with the Lib Dems not yet really having made the most of the fantastic opportunities, frankly, they've got. It really does surprise me that they're not doing better. And people are casting around for something different. You know, I think a really good outcome might be a hung parliament. We get some proportional representation in there and we just get a more balanced parliament, one that looks more like the population at large, one that's more responsive to the population. I think people are just pretty sick of the whole thing.
Mr. Speaker, I spoke to Premier Wen of China this morning, and I made it absolutely clear that there had to be an end to violence in Tibet, and I hope that all sides of the House will agree with that. I also called for constraint, and I called for an end to the violence by dialogue between the different parties. The Premier told me that, subject to two things that the Dalai Lama has already said, that he does not support the total independence of Tibet and that he renounces violence, that he would be prepared to enter into dialogue with the Dalai Lama. I will meet the Dalai Lama when he is in London. I think it is important that we all facilitate discussions, but the most important thing at the moment is to bring about an end to the violence, reconciliation, and to see legitimate talks taking place between those people in China.
Yes, that was Gordon Brown introducing us to a new creature called the Dalai Lama. To you and me, that is the Dalai Lama, the spiritual leader of the Tibetan people who is to meet Gordon Brown. Caroline, I imagine you're in favour of meeting the Dalai Lama, but don't we have to be careful how we handle this? You presumably want to have influence over Chinese and to persuade them to grow their economy in a green-friendly way, which means not upsetting them.
Well, I certainly want to have influence over the Chinese, but I think the policy of not upsetting them has shown to be absolutely ineffective. It hasn't worked. It was a perfectly legitimate option to try. And, you know, the idea of them having the Olympics might have been one where we could say, well, this will give us real leverage. This will enable us to really address human rights. If they really want the Olympics that much, we can really use that, in a sense, to leverage up human rights standards. But I think what we're seeing now just demonstrates that that simply isn't working. And so I think we do need much tougher action. I think we do need to be saying, at the very minimum, that politicians shouldn't be going to the opening ceremonies. I think a wider boycott at least should be on the table. Otherwise, this softly, softly approach is just one where we're shown to be completely weak. And the bottom line, of course, is the reason that the EU, for example, has been so timid in speaking out against China, where it was much stronger on Burma, for example. It actually went ahead with a ban on gemstones and timber and metals from Burma. On Tibet, it's kind of just saying, well, if you could just be a little bit more restrained, we'd be happy. I mean, what's at the bottom of that is basically, you know, money for British corporations. It's basically big business that's dictating this kind of policy. I think that's a sham.
There's also labour marginals. I mean, there is Chinese investment in some that often sometimes Gordon Brown will mention at PMQs. I mean, I presume you'd say that even at the expense of that investment, for instance,
absolutely,
politicians should boycott it.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the government makes a lot of play about the rule of law, about democracy, about human rights, and that means that they're indivisible and non-negotiable. You stand up for them and you don't start cutting and shaving and ducking and diving just because, you know, a certain amount of investment might be at stake. I mean, it's tragic if that investment goes. But, you know, we've tried a quieter, a calmer approach, and it hasn't worked.
So I think that's a very oversimplistic interpretation of it. I mean, I think what's happening here, and perhaps what we've been talking about earlier, you have a thing of when you're in power, it isn't always that easy. You don't just say, OK, we're going to boycott everything in China. I mean, what Gordon Brown is doing...
Yeah,
well, what Gordon Brown is doing is sort of marching along this very difficult track of sort of, do you totally alienate the Chinese, or do you try to bring them in to the international world
but
by negotiating with them?
That?
Well, the fact is, if we say whatever we say to China, they're not going to turn around and say, oh dear, you know, the British are cross with us, we'll change our ways. The only way I think of getting China back into the mainstream international community is to work with them. And it's going to be sticks and carrots. And yes, it will be very delicate negotiation. You're going to have to give a little bit. You're going to have to stand up sometimes and sometimes not. You cannot just go in and say, China, you know, you've done wrong, we won't have it.
No,
because the Chinese will take not a blind bit of notice.
I think you can use more leverage, though. For example, one of the things that many of the human rights organisations are calling for is to have some kind of independent human rights analysis of what's going on in China, to get the Chinese to allow those kinds of independent human rights analysis to get in the country, and journalists. Now, that could be a bargaining tool. You know, if you want to keep the Olympics, if you want the politicians to go there, can we please have that? I think we could still be an awful lot more tough without necessarily being utterly simplistic.
But arguably, having the Olympics in the first place is actually going to have far more effect on the Chinese authorities' behaviour than if we start being tough and sort of condemning them and trying to cut them off.
It's only going to have that effect if we use it as a lever. And at the moment, we don't seem to be using it as a lever. We seem to be having a hands-off approach. I think we do need to be more sophisticated about using that lever.
Allegra, can I just ask you, interesting debate there, should we be softly, softly, should we be harder? I mean, the point about China is it's going to be the world's largest economy in 20 years' time. Presumably, if we don't engage with them, if we don't perhaps crawl to them to get business out of them, we'll be overtaken by Germany, we'll be overtaken by France, we'll be overtaken by China.
Angela Merkel is one of the ones that has also met the Dalai Lama. So I think anything we're doing, I don't think we're singling ourselves out as particularly soft or particularly hard.
But isn't Germany slightly different? Because Germany is the world's largest exporter. They're a bigger beast than we are, so they can sort of throw their weight around a bit sometimes, maybe.
Possibly. I mean, the problem is that China has said we will only talk to the Dalai Lama if it does two things. They renounce violence and call off the protests. He's done both those things. So one of the problems underscoring the entire discussion is that actually, China just doesn't seem to want to talk to him at the moment. And really, they should, because I'm sort of worried he's going to turn into the kind of Mahmoud Abbas of Tibet, in that he's got this whole new generation of Tibetans who do think it's legitimate to use violence to sort out the problem. And the Dalai Lama will become irrelevant unless Western leaders do try to prop him up.
Thanks for that. Well, King Newt launches campaign for the London mayoral contest this week. Yes, Ken Livingstone wants a third term as London mayor, but he's facing a strong challenge from Boris Johnson. Jackie, can I ask you, do you think Londoners are fed up with Ken Livingstone?
Oh, well, I don't think so. I'm not fed up with Ken Livingstone. I'm horrified at the prospect of Boris Johnson becoming the mayor. I mean, I've known Boris well for years. He really is, I don't think, not a serious politician. He can put on a serious act. He's very funny, very witty, great joker. But the thought of him actually running things just fills me with complete horror. I do welcome this pact that Ken's now done with the Greens, because I'm hoping that'll be the only way of saving his rather faltering campaign. I do think the Evening Standard during all of this has played a wicked role in open propaganda over the last year against Ken, and I think that really does need looking at and exposing a little bit more. But no, I think it's not all over yet for Ken, but certainly he's got a big fight on his hands.
Caroline, Jackie mentioned the pact that the Greens have reached with Ken Livingstone, which is essentially the Greens are saying to their supporters, put us number one, Ken number two, and Ken is saying, put me number one and the Greens number two. Why do you want to give Ken a third term?
Well, I think we've got more influence over Ken than we will have over Boris. I mean, if you look at the way in which the Greens have worked with Ken over the last few years, I think we've really been able to get some serious achievements. I mean, we've had a more or less casting vote on the mayoral budget, and that's enabled us to put massively more money into renewable energies, for example, energy efficiency, into cycling. We've really been able to have some leverage. I think if you look at the policies of Boris Johnson and the way he reacts to the broader progressive green agenda, there's very little evidence, if any, that he would take any of that kind of influence at all. And so I think really what's at stake here is whether or not London continues on a progressive, multicultural, diverse, greener path, or whether or not we really turn the clock backwards. I'm really very, very worried about the way in which some Londoners don't seem to be taking this contest very seriously. There's a joke about the whole thing. You know, Boris is funny, and it makes people think that the whole election is funny, but it's not. If Boris got into power there, if Boris was mayor, London would look absolutely different. And if London can't stand up to this threat, you know, London being the most diverse city, not only in this country, but almost, you know, in Europe, if we can't stand up for multicultural values in London, then it's, I think, a pretty grim prospect elsewhere.
Can I just ask you, when you say that your party has a casting vote and that's meant that Ken has done green things, does that mean that Ken is doing green things because he has to, because he needs your support, or do you think he is genuinely committed to those issues?
I think he is committed to those issues, but I don't think he would have gone as far or as fast as he has if it hadn't been for Green snapping at his ankles and concentrating his mind over the budget to actually make things happen. I mean, I'm not suggesting he's only doing it because of our pressure, but I think our pressure has been really instrumental in getting him down that road.
Now, Allegra, you were nodding when Caroline was saying that Boris Johnson is not a wholly serious figure. You were out with him last week. Tell us about Boris Johnson.
No, I think the opposite. I think the moment, we know he's on best behaviour. We know the crack team's been sent in to whip him into shape. He's certainly not making as many gags. Well, he wasn't on Saturday. He was very funny, but he wasn't making as many to get gags. What I was nodding my head at was some Londoners don't seem to realise how serious it is, because he was going up to black constituents and grabbing them by the hand, and they were saying, yeah, you've got my vote, and they were emphatic. There was one woman who went a bit crazy, and she said, you're disgraceful, and there was a bit of a ruck. But of the six, five of them said, yeah, you've got it, and that might just be the personality. Yeah, I mean, come on, when a charismatic politician comes up to anyone in the street, people are minded to say, yeah, you've got my vote. So it's not necessary that they will vote for him on May the 1st. But if you look at the one policy he launched this week, affordable housing, he said he's going to match Ken on that. But he's also going to relax what Ken certainly wouldn't relax, which is forcing councils to do the affordable housing. Mm. How is he going to do affordable housing if he doesn't force councils to do it? So I think on that one thing, I think it's sort of Boris comes unstuck.
From what you've seen of Boris, do you think he can get rid of the Jeeves and Worcester Boris, but don't become an utterly boring Boris? Can he sort of do that difficult?
I'm not saying I think it's a good thing, but I think he possibly can for the election campaign. I think over the period of a year to a year and a half to 2 years that would see us go from the London mayoral elections to a probable general election, I think that there is a question mark over whether Boris wouldn't become the biggest problem for the National Conservatives. You know, there's sort of arguments doing the rounds about, you know, Labour want Boris to win because then he'll be an absolute disaster in London, and then that will sort of boost Labour's national chances. I mean, it's just gossip.
Very high risk strategy.
Yeah, it's extreme, but I don't think it's a strategy. I think it would be a way of making
themselves feel better if Ken lost. I don't think it's a strategy.
And Caroline, can I ask you, you said that one of the reasons you're keen to have this pact with Ken Livingstone is it's important for progressive politics that he does well, and obviously that you do well. How important do you think this contest is beyond London? It looks like we might have a UK general election next year or the year after. If Ken Livingstone loses, does that matter for the UK? Does that matter for progressive politics in the UK?
Well, I suppose it depends on the extent to you think that the National Labour government is about progressive policies. And at the moment, it doesn't seem to be very much. So, I mean, I'd like to say that it would perhaps be, you know, a complete black light for progressive politics in Britain. But at the minute, we've got two parties, neither of which are genuinely any more about progressive policies. And that's the tragedy of it. So what I hope is that maybe it will just show so much disgust, really, with the two main parties that we will have a more pluralistic parliament after that. That people will look for the alternative parties, including the Greens, to be actually getting some refreshing new approaches to politics in there that actually deliver for what they stand for. They don't have this yawning gulf between the rhetoric on the one side and the reality. And that crucially, if I can put climate change back on the agenda, but you know, this is something we've not talked about at the minute, but when you've got the urgency around something like climate change, we're told we've got 8 to 10 years to put in place a genuinely rigorous policy framework to cope with that, then the next general election is going to be absolutely crucial. And we've got to have politicians in Westminster who are really going to address that seriously.
And as you were saying, a hung parliament ideal for you, because you say that that would obviously provide a more balanced view of the nation, but also could lead to proportional representation. PR has given you a parliamentarian in Scotland, and also on these aisles, you have ministers in the Irish government, and they have PR in Ireland.
Exactly. I mean, the rest of Britain is really the odd man out when you look at what's happening across Europe, where you've got Greens not just in parliaments, but in governments. As you say, we've got a couple of people in Scotland. When we've got PR, we get Greens elected. So many times on the doorstep, people say, well, we would vote for you, but we're not sure that you're going to get in. If people know that a Green vote translates into a Green seat, then they do vote Green. And I think it would be incredibly positive for this country.
Thanks for that. Well, that's it from this week's edition of Politics Weekly. Thanks to my guests, the Green Party MEP Caroline Lucas, the Guardian columnist Jackie Ashley, and theguardian.co.uk journalist Allegra Stratton. Politics Weekly was produced by Ian Chambers. Join me again after the Easter break on April the 24th. Till then, goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.